The Leopard Hunter. Mr. Faulkner had been staying at the Browns' house for a very long time. He had written to Mr. Brown to remind him of the fact that they'd been at school together and to ask him if he might pay him a short visit. Mr. Faulkner was like that. Also, his idea of a short visit was not Mr. Brown's. Not that Mr. Faulkner needed much entertaining. He entertained himself. He talked. William had never met anyone who talked quite as much as his father's guest, and the subject of all his conversation was Mr. Faulkner. He talked about his exalted social position, his many and varied talents, and his marvellous exploits. Mr. Faulkner was small and rather stout, with a round face, a small blighted moustache, and a glassy stare. During term time, Mr. Faulkner did not trouble William very much. At meals, William rather welcomed the presence of Mr. Faulkner than otherwise. Mr. Faulkner's accounts of his dauntless bravery and dazzling cleverness seemed to induce in William's family a certain apathy of hopelessness, which William thought a very proper attitude on the part of a family. No one told William to go and wash his hands and brush his hair. No one made sarcastic remarks about his table manners. They simply had not the spirit. In fact, such is the humanizing effect of a common misfortune, they almost felt drawn to him. They'd thought that no family could be afflicted with an affliction worse than William. They had discovered their mistake. They had discovered Mr. Faulkner. Then came the end of the term. The end of the term was a time of mixed feelings for William. On the one hand, there was the glorious prospect of the Easter holidays. On the other hand, there was his school report. This time, Mr. Faulkner was there. Before Mr. Brown could begin his usual set speech expressive of horror and disgust, Mr. Faulkner took the report from him and began to comment on it.
"By Jove! Very different from the things I used to get. Excellent and all that sort of thing all over them. Now, this boy of yours, Brown, I've no doubt that I shall be able to help him a good deal during the holidays. I always get on well with children. A marked difference in them from the minute they know me."
Mr. Brown said he didn't doubt it. During this interview, William sat with his most inscrutable expression and stared at the guest unblinkingly. The next day was the first day of the holidays. William wandered out into the garden after breakfast and, to his horror, saw that the guest was accompanying him.
"Now, my boy, tell me how many names of flowers you know."
William cleared his throat sternly and went on as though he had neither seen nor heard Mr. Faulkner.
"None? Come, come, tut-tut. That's sad for a boy of your age. Where are you going? Out into the road? Very well, I'm at your service. I can join in all your little activities, you know. Now, here in this hedge, you will see the arum or cuckoo pint. Notice the large hood, which is botanically termed a spathe. Notice also the spadix and the stamens."
At the end of the road stood Ginger, Douglas and Henry. Their faces dropped as they saw William's companion.
"Ha, ha, ha! These your friends, Willie? They're going to join us for the morning? Very well, little boys. Come along with us quietly. Now, would you like to tell you about the habits of the busy little ant?"
The outlaws were nonplussed. They had meant to go to the old barn where they generally played, but they felt they could not go with this. It would spoil the old barn for them forever. And they couldn't escape it. Mr. Faulkner's voice had a sort of hypnotizing effect. It paralyzed all their faculties. Once, in the middle of the discourse on the busy little ant, they caught each other's eyes, and into their dejected faces came a gleam of hope, and they set off running. But their self-appointed friend ran too. Despite his stoutness, he could run.
"Oh, a little run? Oh, yes, certainly. Nothing like exercise, nothing like exercise. That will do now, I think, though."
And so utterly were their spirits broken that they let that do. They slowed down.
"A rest here, I think. Ah, now, I'll give you a little practice in mental arithmetic. Let's see who can get the right answer."
It was a nightmare of a morning for the outlaws. He gave them a little lecture on history and another on geography. He spoke to them at great length on patriotism and manliness and the British Empire.
"Well," he said brightly when he led them back to the Browns' house at lunchtime, "I'm afraid I can't come out with you this afternoon, but tomorrow morning, Willie and I will be with you early."
The outlaws stared at each other blankly for a minute. Then Douglas, Ginger and Henry turned on William. "Well," they said sternly, "we'll wait for you tomorrow morning, but if we see him come in with you, we'll just run off alone." The outlaws spent the afternoon together, but it was not a happy one. The shadow of Mr. Faulkner lay heavy over it. When William returned home, Mr. Faulkner was still talking to his father. He was talking about a mounted leopard skin which lay across the back of the sofa.
Where was it shot? He said.
In Africa, by my brother, said Mr. Brown shortly.
Quite easy things to shoot, leopards,
bleated Mr. Faulkner.
Oh, you shot many? Said Mr. Brown.
Oh, yes, in Africa, you know. Fact is, leopards know a good shot when they see 'em. Now, no leopard would dream of attacking me. I simply raise my gun, the thing turns to flee, and I get him on the run. Never fail. I don't know what fear is, never have. Big game shooting is like knocking down skittles to me.
It was late that evening when William came into the room and said excitedly, The leopard's escaped from the circus at Offord. Ginger just heard down in the village. They're out trying to find him and shoot him. He's a wild leopard. Mr. Brown turned to his guest.
An opportunity for you, Faulkner, he said.
Mr. Faulkner turned rather pale.
Ha-ha!
He laughed nervously. Mr. Brown looked almost as if he were enjoying himself.
You simply look at him, you know, he said, and shoot him as he turns to flee.
Ha-ha!
Laughed Mr. Faulkner again, mirthlessly.
But I haven't got a gun.
Oh, but I've got one, said Mr. Brown. Loaded, too. I'll get it for you.
Mr. Faulkner's jaw fell open loosely.
I wouldn't dream of putting you to all that trouble.
No trouble at all, said Mr. Brown, with beaming politeness, as he went from the room.
Mr. Faulkner sat down and mopped his brow, smiling inanely. William sat down in a corner of the room and watched him. Mr. Brown returned with the gun.
Here it is. Now, don't let me detain you, my dear fellow. I'm sure a sportsman like you must be longing to join the fray.
And he pushed the reluctant sportsman to the front door.
Goodbye, old chap. Good luck.
Then he returned to the dining room. William had mysteriously disappeared.
Well, said Mr. Brown, I've stood him every night for 3 weeks, and tonight I'm going to have a holiday. I don't care whether the leopard eats him or he eats the leopard. I'm going to bed.
And what shall I do? Read? Said Mrs. Brown.
Well, come to bed too, if you've any sense. You can leave the front door unlocked. He'll come back soon enough, you bet.
Meanwhile, the courageous hunter was creeping cautiously down the garden path. There was a cold sweat of fear upon his brow. Suppose the creature happened to be in the garden? He held the gun very cautiously. He hoped the beastly thing wouldn't go off. Nasty, dangerous things, guns. Suddenly, he was startled by a sound in the bushes behind him. With a scream of terror, he dashed away down to the end of the little path, where there was a summer house, and onto this the intrepid game hunter clambered, panting and moaning. He was rather surprised to find that he still had the gun. The little sound in the bushes was repeated. He gazed down through the darkness.
Go away, you brute, he said sternly. Shoo, shoo.
It didn't shoo. On the contrary, there came the sound of some stealthy creature creeping through the bushes. Twigs cracked. He could see the bushes move as the thing approached.
I told you to go away,
he squeaked hysterically from his roof.
Go away!
The thing came on. Perhaps it might be a cat or a dog, thought the hunter. And at the thought, hope sprang afresh in his heart.
Puss, 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 puss,
he said through the darkness. There was no response.
Good dog, on trust. Where's that bone? Good dog.
There was no response. Something fairly large, not a cat or a dog, banged against the summer house. He peered anxiously over the edge of the roof. And then there came, through the darkness, a low growl. It certainly wasn't a cat or a dog. It was certainly a leopard. He'd never heard a leopard's voice before. For the matter of that, he'd never seen a leopard before. But there was no doubt that this was a leopard's voice. He began to think out plans. He leant over the edge and gave a ferocious growl. The growl that answered his through the darkness made his blood curdle.
Oh, 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 oh,
he moaned.
Oh, my holy aunt!
The thing was prowling round and round the summer house. Mr. Faulkner suddenly saw himself as he might be in the morning light, a mass of whitened bones. Or did the creatures eat you, bones and all? The tears rolled down his fat cheeks at the thought. Soon he realized that all was silent. He waited for what seemed hours. Still silence. Surely now he might creep back to the house. He lowered one foot cautiously from the roof. Then he gave a yell. Something had grabbed at it in the darkness. He wrenched it free and cowered on his roof, rubbing it.
Oh, 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 my holy aunt!
The agony of that night will live forever in the memory of the leopard hunter. Most terrible was the moment when the leopard tried to clamber up the summer house. At last, the first faint rays of dawn appeared. They grew less faint. Mr. Faulkner's pallid countenance peered over the edge of his roof. He could hear no sound. Then he saw it. Saw it unmistakably, a leopard's head among the bushes. With a sudden spasm of desperate courage, he took his gun, shut his eyes, and fired. And he hit it. By a miracle, he hit it. He saw it roll over among the bushes. Then all was still. He waited. After about half an hour, he descended cautiously from his perch. He dared not approach his bag. He'd heard terrible stories of the ferocity of wild animals and their death throes. He tiptoed furtively to the front door. They all met at breakfast. Both Mr. Faulkner and William looked as though they'd spent sleepless nights. But Mr. Faulkner, though pale, was his usual debonair self. "Any luck?" said Mr. Brown.
"Oh, yes," said Mr. Faulkner carelessly. I got the brute. Found him in your garden, too. Came upon him face to face in the path. He gathered to spring. I just stood and simply looked at him. He turned and began to slink away. Then I raised my rifle and fired, just as I told you. You'll find the body somewhere in the garden."
They all trooped out. It might have been noticed that the leopard hunter kept modestly in the rear.
Just over by those bushes, I believe," he said airily.
Mr. Brown strode into the bushes and pulled out the leopard skin rug. There was certainly a new bullet hole in its head. The gallant sportsman began to splutter inarticulately.
"What?" began Mr. Brown.
William, wearing his most sphinx-like expression, stepped forward. "I thought it smelt a bit kind of stuffy, and so I brought it out here last night to be in the fresh air a bit, like what it is in spring cleaning and that." The gallant sportsman was still gibbering.
But I heard it.
William turned his inscrutable countenance to him.
"I'm afraid perhaps it was me you heard," he said. "I couldn't sleep, so I got up and just played about the garden a bit, just to make me sleep better. Fresh air and exercise, like what they say makes you sleep. I was playing mostly around the summer house."
Mr. Faulkner looked sharply at William, but William's face was a blank.
"Excuse me a minute,"
murmured Mr. Faulkner, and quietly went indoors.
"Who told you about this leopard?" said Mr. Brown sternly.
"Ginger," said William unblinkingly.
"Who told him?"
"He's not quite sure," said William, in the voice of one repeating a lesson. "He's forgot. He thinks perhaps it was someone in the village."
"Well, you better go and tell Mr. Faulkner that you're sorry you made a mistake."
William went slowly indoors, but Mr. Faulkner had gone. He had left a note to say that he'd been called suddenly to town, and would they kindly send his things after him.
"Dear me, what a pity," said Mr. Brown. "You can't apologise after all, William. Well, never mind."
He slipped a half-crown into William's hand and went off, his face wreathed in smiles. It was 2 hours later. The outlaws sat on the floor in their beloved old barn. In the midst of them were large paper bags of bullseyes, licorice lumps, barley sugar and chocolate cigars. The half-crown had been well expended. The outlaws were munching happily. "What sort of noise did you make?" Ginger was saying, as he puffed out imaginary smoke from his chocolate cigar. William emitted a blood-curdling growl. "And what did he say?"
"Oh, my holy aunt," said William.
It was an excellent imitation of the leopard hunter's quavering moan. "And what did he do?" William rose. "You all come round to our summer house, and I'll show you. Ginger be me growling, and I'll be him carrying on. Come along." They collected the bags and strode off happily with their leader. The Easter holidays were going to be fun, after all.